Wake up! It's the Sleep Unplugged Podcast, episode 54, Insomnia and the Five Senses. See me, feel me, touch me. Welcome everyone to the podcast. My name is Dr. Chris Winter. I'm a neurologist and sleep specialist and your host. Excited that you're here. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. If you're a veteran of our podcast family, welcome back. This has been an exciting week. Last week's episode, episode 53 about sleep and nature, was really popular, did really well. And I think a lot of the concepts from that podcast could be applied to this week's podcast on the five senses and insomnia. If you're familiar with our podcast, the first episode of every month we devote to some concept related to insomnia. And this week's episode was really inspired by my trip to Aspen Ideas. I was invited to a small meeting with the great folks at Calm, and we were talking about anxiety in teens and using the Calm technology in that space. And Calm had brought in a lot of people with expertise in different areas to be a part of that meeting. And we were at a breakfast prior to talking, and sitting right beside me was Gretchen Rubin, the author of The Happiness Project. And she was sitting actually next to my wife, who was there. And I never really got to interact with her. And at the end of the meeting, she said, "I was sitting right next to Gretchen Rubin, the author of The Happiness Project. She has a new book called Life in Five Senses. And she was the nicest person ever." And my wife just gushed about her, just how kind she was and just how inquisitive she was about my wife and some of the work that she's doing, the book my wife's writing. And it was so anyway. Just one of those people that you meet, apparently, that you're just like, wow, they're 10 times better in person than you would have ever expected them to be. And so I bought her book. They had, you know, books for sale there of different authors, and bought her book and immediately started reading. And I mean, as a neurologist, I'm very interested in senses, and you know, there's peripheral research about senses and how they affect sleep. And I thought, this is a really cool idea. So we actually attended a lecture that she gave about the five senses and how she came up with this idea for a story and how she uses essentially more attention and diligence in her life and her five senses with really enhancing it. And I thought, well, what's the research say, or what could we say about using our five senses to enhance our sleep, and if we have insomnia, to make it better? So that's really the inspiration for the topic. If you're watching the YouTube channel, this is her book, Life in Five Senses, and it's a really interesting read. I mean, it's a real personal journey that she sort of takes through discovery, and I invite you to read it. It's a really, really fascinating. So before we get going, we'll start. If you want to contact the show, you have ideas about the show, if you want to share ways you use five senses in your life to enhance your sleep, DM us. We're at Dr. Chris Winter Twitter, Dr. Chris Winter Instagram, Dr. Chris Winter TikTok. And I mentioned we do have a YouTube channel. It's the Sleep Unplugged Podcast. If you search that up on YouTube, you can see posts of all the videos of these podcasts that we do. So we're actually recording audio and video. And you can watch them, and you can see the cover of Gretchen's book, and you can see my Spruce Confections t-shirt I'm wearing from the amazing coffee shop in Boulder, Colorado. I always try to stop in when I'm around there. It's always the Spruce Coffee Shop and the tea room, the Boulder Tea Room, which is an amazing place to have a cup of tea and get something to eat if you're ever there. So we always start the show off with comments, corrections, criticisms, no corrections that I'm aware of. If you ever listen to a podcast and you think, I don't think that's right, or I'm not sure he's understanding that properly or interpreting that data correctly, just DM the show. We'd be happy to make that correction for everybody. I'll start with a comment, and this goes back to probably back to Catathrenia, the episode that we did, which has been wildly popular in terms of the YouTube video. This was episode 30, Catathrenia and sleep related moaning. Here she comes now seeing Moni Moni. Oh, and speaking of Moni Moni, it is on the Spotify playlist. So if you're interested in the music that we talk about on the show, I compiled a Spotify playlist of all the different songs we've talked about over the past year. If you look up the Sleep Unplugged Podcast Volume 1 on Spotify, you can find that and you can subscribe to that podcast and it'll pop up on your feed and you can tell us what songs you like and what songs resonate with you. Maybe a song you listen to before you go to bed at night, which we'll talk about later. So anyway, this was a message on the YouTube channel from Best10612. I encourage you to find her because she's an incredible mandolin player, banjo mandolin player. And so she's posted videos of herself playing these songs and I took a look at a couple of them. They're really, really spectacular. And she wrote, "I coo in my sleep. I've done it since I was a baby and now I'm 37. My husband says it gets pretty loud, but it's a coo. Any thoughts on that?" Now, I appreciate you sharing that. It's interesting. This could be sort of a version of catathrenia, I suppose. Catathrenia is generally a sleep-related expiratory moan. So it's more of a kind of thing, like, you know, a mooing cow or something like that. Again, my software edits out weird sounds, so you may not have heard me make a sound just now, but if you imagine just kind of a grunt or something like that is more like the catathrenia coo. It seems to be a little bit different. Now, there are self-soothing things that children do a lot of times when they sleep. Thumb sucking, twisting your hair around your finger, body rocking, head rocking, rubbing your legs together. And some of these can be, the person can be aware of them. In other cases, the individual is not aware that they're doing it. And it's really interesting because what I see as a clinician is a 26-year-old come to my clinic who says, "Hey, I've been dating this person. We started living together and they are really concerned about the fact that I kind of violently rock back and forth or I suck my thumb right before I go to bed." And a lot of times these are these self-soothing behaviors that, you know, 90% of the time disappear as we mature. In some cases, they don't. So I'm wondering if that cooing could be related to that. Certainly breathing disturbances can often show up as vocalizations as well, too. And as one of my professors said, any stereotyped behavior is a seizure until proven otherwise. I don't want to scare you, Best 10612. I don't think this represents a seizure, but that was something that was always said to us. We had one young woman who, when she went to bed every night, she would start cursing. And that turned out to be a seizure that she was having, but really just having those seizures at night primarily. Anyway, thanks for contacting the show, Best 10612. Best of luck to your sleep and best of luck in your musical career. You're a really talented musician. In terms of the title, we will add to our Spotify playlist Volume 2 the song. Depending on how you look at it, the song is actually called "We're Not Gonna Take It." That's not the Twisted Sister song. That's actually the Who's song. It's the final song off of their spectacular rock opera and fourth album, Tommy. It was released in 1969. And "We're Not Gonna Take It" is actually three songs. It's "We're Not Gonna Take It." It's "See Me, Feel Me. And then the final part of it is what's often referred to as "Listening to You." So Tommy came out in 1969. It was a massive, massive hit for The Who and a huge risk. Pete Townsend wrote the entire, essentially, rock opera and, you know, was encouraged to really, you know, take a risk and take a gamble. And it really paid off for The Who. It really launched them into the international megastars that they were. The title of Tommy was originally Deaf, Dumb, and Blind Boy, but they changed it to Tommy, the main character, Tommy Walker, has this sort of psychological collapse and becomes this sort of messiah figure and then loses his followers is sort of the essential piece of the rock opera. But it's an amazing piece of music. It's one of my favorite albums to listen to. I get chills listening to certain songs, and See Me, Feel Me is a great title for the for a podcast about the senses. And one of my favorite little trivias about The Who and Tommy was when they would perform it in shows, Keith Moon, their drummer, would generally say to the crowd, "Everybody get quiet and show some fucking respect. We're about to play an opera." Just, that was just awesome. So anyway, hats off to Tommy. We'll put that on the Instagram, the Spotify playlist. So let's talk about the five senses in Insomnium. One of the things I think is very important when it comes to Insomnium is that it's not something that we are running from, but it really becomes something constructive and something that we are moving towards and coming to grips with. It's insomnia is often less about curing a problem and more about acceptance. And what I mean by that is, we're all going to go to bed tonight. Some of us will fall asleep relatively quickly. Some of us will stay asleep throughout the night, and some of us will not. That's part of a human condition. So what is the plan for if one of us gets into bed tonight and we don't fall asleep very quickly? Is the plan to panic? Is the plan to be upset? Is the plan to be immediately feeling around your nightstand for your sleeping pills? Or is the plan to be, well, this happens sometimes, it's not that big a deal, I'll just do X, Y, and Z until sleep comes. So the first part of insomnia is recognizing it is a problem, because many people, myself included, do not, meaning that it's an issue I'm dealing with my patients. But personally, if I wake up tonight at 3 o'clock in the morning, get up and go back to sleep, try to go back to sleep, and I don't see that as being anything out of the ordinary or concerning, really. I'm personally going to sit there in bed until I fall asleep. But I think there's other things that you can do that maybe are a bit more constructive. So a lot of insomnia talks about, insomnia therapy talks about making the bedroom a positive space. We're moving into a place not where trauma is happening, but really more towards a place where we are going that we feel positive about and we're excited about. And I think the five senses can really hold a key to making that happen. So let's start with vision. I think vision is a very important sense. Our bodies devote a lot of attention to it. And vision is fascinating. I mean, when you think about vision, we're taking in external cues through our eyes. They're traveling through our optic nerves. And the left side is of our visual world and the right side of our visual world get sort of mixed as those optic nerves cross at the optic chiasm, which sits very close to your pituitary gland. So often when people have pituitary issues and the pituitary gland starts to get bigger, it pushes on the optic nerve in different ways and creates visual phenomenon. So the visual information continues back to the processing area of our brain, which we obviously as humans devote a lot of brain real estate to visual processing, and we make sense of the visual world that we see. And so a lot of Gretchen's book talks about, in terms of, she divides it into five chapters on each sense. The vision chapter was really about paying attention to our world in great detail. And one of the techniques we use for individuals with insomnium, and I use it a lot with individuals in sports that I work with, is I want you to take some aspect of your life. If you're a pitcher, I want you to think about pitching. If you're a basketball player, I want you to think about shooting free throws. And I want you to put yourself in the position of being on the pitcher's mound or being in the gymnasium at the free throw stripe. I want you to imagine the scene in as much detail as possible. Color, texture, tones, you know, the highlights, the shadows. You know, if you're the pitcher, I want you to see the grains of dirt. I want you to look at the blades of grass and the different colors of green that are represented in that space. I want you to imagine your favorite catcher behind the plate. You can visualize an empty stadium or visualize a packed stadium in a playoff game, like whatever you want to do, but it has to be in exquisite detail. And when you go to bed, your job is to create that visualization, that virtual reality landscape in your mind, where you can look around and see, you know, the concession stand person selling hot dogs and the big screen with your picture on it and the score of the game. And I want you to throw 30 perfect pitches, everything that you work on in practice, everything you work on with your coach, every bit of mechanics that you're dealing with. I want you to do that in the most perfect way. Your arm comes up, it reaches that perfect slot. Your release of the ball is perfect. You see the ball actually spinning. You can actually see the stitches on the ball. And that ball is spinning, 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 traveling and arcing, and pop. It lands right in the catcher's mitt, exactly the way you wanted to throw it, in the exact placement of where you wanted to throw it. And you visualize the catcher throwing the ball back to you, and all the little movements and adjustments and, you know, scratching your crotch, whatever you do. When you're pitching that ball, you're doing it in your mind, and you're going to do it 30 times before you go to bed. There's some really interesting things about that. Number one, the act of visualizing like that, creating that landscape, takes a lot of brain energy. And I think of brain energy as being finite. And if you're taking up all that brain energy, visualizing that space, it's taking it away from worrying about falling asleep. And if you are a pitcher or a basketball player, that visualization can make you better at the task. So forget basketball. Although I had a WNBA player who, when I was talking to her about sleep, she was talking about visualizing an empty gym. It was kind of dark. Somebody she couldn't see would throw her basketball. She would shoot it, it would go in. And I said, that's a really interesting thing that you do. Why do you do that? And she said, I've done this ever since I was a little girl to fall asleep. So I've always found it to be really interesting that as a basketball player, she just visualizes basketball. Does it actually make her a better basketball player in addition to helping her sleep? So forget about the pro athlete. If you're a golfer, imagine hitting a golf ball. If you like to play pickleball, imagine your pickleball serve or imagine a pickleball volley happening. I've had people bake banana bread. I mean, it doesn't have to be even athletic related, but if you're going to bake the banana bread, it needs to be a complete visual experience. You are cracking eggs, looking at the shell of the egg as it cracks and picking little pieces of shell out of your batter. You're seeing the bright blue mixing bowl that you've had because your mother had it, and the mixing bowl you've always had and have all these great memories with. You're mixing the batter in there and you do all the steps in perfect painstaking detail. I've had a lot of patients really say that that kind of thing really helps. Something that I've done is I like to imagine myself in architectural spaces. Like, you imagine yourself in your dream vacation home. So while you imagine yourself inside it, you're actually decorating it. You're putting a desk here and a chair here and that really cool chaise lounge that you saw when you were on vacation that was in the cool hotel room you stayed in. It's now in your home and it looks out over the mountains or the lake or the ocean or wherever you're sitting. So don't underestimate visualization as a strong tool for sleep. Auditory, we'll switch to our second sense of hearing. Gretchen talks a lot about in her book, creating an audio apothecary, meaning that there's lots of music in our lives, and she has an interesting relationship with music, that music is going to do certain things for the way we feel. And she was like, look, instead of just a playlist of songs that I like, I'm going to be very intentional about creating songs that make me happy. And if you are all on Spotify, or you do listen to the Spotify Sleep Unplugged playlist or your own playlist, I've got several playlists, and you know, one's like Chris's favorites or Chris's workout music. It's really interesting when I'll put a song on there a couple months later, when that song pops up on a walk or in the gym, it's not having the same effect on me anymore. I still like the song, but there's when the first few notes of it play, I feel irritated or indifferent or sad or highly motivated. And it's interesting how that changes. And so what she's saying is, I'm only going to make songs on this playlist that make me really happy. So even if I like the song, I've got a sentimental attachment to it, if those first few notes don't create happiness, it's gone. And she put a list of songs on there that made her happy. And they were a really interesting, eclectic group of songs, to be sure. So I thought, well, this is interesting. Maybe instead of an audio hypothecary, what about an audio hypnotic? So a hypnotic's another word for a sleeping pill. Now, I'll say up front, I don't want this to become something that you have to sleep. You know, we want things to supplement our sleep, not be dependencies. But I love the idea of what songs relax you. As soon as you hear them, from starting note to finishing note, they take you from a 74 down to a 32. And I like the idea, you know, a lot of people like to listen to music when they go to sleep. I'm okay with that. I think it's good if it's on a timer, so the music plays and then it eventually cuts off so that you're not listening to it all night long. I like the idea of that. Or even just one song that as you're getting ready for bed at night, you play one song that sort of gets you into that space, gets you into that mental mindset of being settled down. And I think that that one song can be really powerful because it creates yet another cue for our sleep, or a sight gibber we've talked about on the show, meaning that turning the TV off, going to your bedroom, now you're going to brush your teeth, you let the dogs out, floss, put your lotions and creams on for the night, take any medications at night, you know, not sleeping pills, but your other medications, you take them too, and get your water next to the bed and turn on your noise machine, whatever you want to do. So you're doing that thing. I like the idea of one song, and I'll throw a suggestion out there to you. I've always found the Cowboy Junkies to be a very relaxing, meditative group. And one of the songs that I like to listen to sometimes before I go to bed is a song called Lost My Driving Wheel, which is a cover. And it's just got this great sort of slow pace. You know, I remember watching this movie with Zac Efron called We Are Your Friends, I think. I might be getting the title wrong. But it's all about being sort of a music DJ. And there's a great scene in the movie where he talks about, okay, well, you're going to start off with songs with this many beats per minute. And that gets people engaged in the music, gets your crowd kind of with you. And then once they're with you, you're going to keep increasing the beats per minute during the concert or during the, you know, the DJ, you know, session that's going on. You're going to keep increasing the beats per minute in this way, because that really whips the crowd into a frenzy. If you watch that movie, that scene's fantastic. It's really well done with visuals, and it just really kind of looks at the exploration of the science of music and how it gets people fired up and excited in a good mood. This is sort of the opposite of that, isn't it? We're taking music and we're going to try to slowly drive people down. And there was a great study in the Journal of Clinical Sleep Medicine. We mentioned white noise. It was called Systemic Review, Auditory Stimulation and Sleep. And essentially, they looked at 34 studies of white noise and pink noise and multi-audio combinations and the binaural beats and all the things we've talked about. And the conclusions were, there's no strong evidence to support the use of auditory stimulation really affects sleep in any meaningful way. So, you know, using the white noise, the pink noise to knock you out, I don't think there's a lot of great data for that, but that's very different from using an auditory landscape to set the stage for better sleep or to set the stage for a reduced insomnia. One final thing that I'll throw out there, which I sort of picked up from Gretchen's book as well, too, is silence. You know, I always think silence is probably best for sleep. So that's why I sort of recommend that the timer on your music go off so it stops playing, so you're not listening to the Cowboy Junkies all night long. Silence to me is probably the gold standard. And what I think is a really fun exercise to do when you go to bed and you're in the silence is to actually hear the silence. We're very seldom in a soundless landscape. So when you're in bed and everything's quiet, I want you to look for look for sounds. I was just in the museum in Boston. I'm blanking on the name of it. It was a private home. It's an amazing museum. It's a really, it's like a woman had this amazing art collection, personal art collection, and this amazing architectural house. And when she died, she said, I want this to be a public museum, but you don't touch or change anything. Oh, I can't believe I'm blanking on the name of it. I'll throw it in the comments. But there's this great painting in that museum that looks like a frame around a painting that is black. And when you go over and look at it and you stare at it, you start to see faintest outline of an island and a tiny little campfire that you missed. Oh, wait a minute. There's a lighthouse that's silhouetted in black and a tiny little light at the top of the lighthouse. And you can actually see the reflection of the lighthouse in the water. So it's just amazing that you start with nothing. And by the time you walk away from that painting, you can see all kinds of things. And I want you to do that with the sounds of silence. Your room is probably not silent. You can hear things going on. Neighborhood sounds, air conditioning sounds, animals outside, the sound of your partner breathing, you know, a movement of one of your children upstairs making the floorboards creak. And it's fun to go on a sound hunt as a way to sort of relax and sort of integrate into your landscape. So that's an interesting thought there too. So we'll go on to smell or olfaction. One of my favorite smells, if you look at the pathway of the olfactory nerve, it's these bulbs sit in your nose and they go literally straight back into your brainstem. And olfaction is really tied in our brains to emotion and memory. And so I think that an opportunity to really improve sleep comes with paying attention to smell. And one of my favorite parts about Gretchen's book, and she mentioned this in the lecture that I saw when she was at Aspen, was a concept I've never heard of before, which is your diplomatic odor. So if you chew gum or brush your teeth with a certain toothpaste, a certain cologne, a certain deodorant, it's all the stuff you do to generally kind of go out into public. That's your diplomatic odor. And one of the things I thought about smell was really using that of your partner to help with better sleep. So one of the things I've always recommended to players is, hey, if you go on the road and you struggle a bit to sleep, take your pillowcase, or better yet, take your partner's pillowcase with you or pillow. So when you get into the Four Seasons Hotel, the bed's not quite right. The lighting's a little bit weird. This sounds kind of funny. Sheets feel differently, but at least the smell of that pillow is really taking you back to your home, being next to the person that you love. And we'll talk about touch in a minute. And even though you can't touch him or her or them, you can smell them. And I think that's really helpful. In terms of smells that can be helpful with sleep, there was a really interesting poster when I was in Indianapolis at the big sleep meeting. And we talked about some of the research from that sleep meeting in episode 51. One of the pieces of research I left out of that because I couldn't fit them all in was a Brazilian study that looked at 34 postmenopausal women and how their sleep was improved by exposure to lavender. And I think the control group was being exposed to sunflower oil, that sweet smell, And clearly lavender was improving sleep over that other smell. And there's been other double-blind crossover studies that have done the same thing with, I think, sweet almond oil. Lavender always seems to outperform all those things. That floral scent is really helpful. And there was another study. There were studies in 2006 and 2012 on lavender, another study in 2010 on chamomile, really showing that sort of reciprocal relationship between sleep and smell and how certain smells might be able to improve sleep. Again, if you're listening to this podcast and you say, look, it takes me 4 hours to fall asleep every night. I'm lucky if I get 1 hour. I wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, can never go back to sleep. I'm not here to tell you that sniffing a little bit of chamomile is going to solve all of your problems. Again, there's many things that need to happen for that individual before we can get to this place. But what I'm saying is that it's if you're setting yourself up to succeed in the bedroom, and one of the best defenses of insomnia is to really get your sleep straight before you ever have your first night of insomnia, this is a great thing to sort of fall into. The lavender spray on your pillow every night when you're at home. When you travel, you take the spray with you. And again, just like that Cowboy Junkie song, you're playing that song every night as you get ready to go to bed. So your brain starts to associate the voice of Margot Timmons singing this cover song that's beautiful with, oh, we're getting ready to go to sleep. This is what we associate with sleep. Lavender can be the same way. Spray it on your pillow, you smell it, and you start to associate, oh, this is that smell I smell of chamomile, of lavender, whatever, when I get ready to go to bed. Taste is a tricky one. I mean, I think that I was trying to come up with some really creative way that taste could be involved. I've told people before, I love coffee. Got a lot of coffee shop t-shirts in my life. I love coffee. I would drink it every night before I went to bed if I could, but it clearly affects my sleep. So I've had to make a decision. What do I want? The hedonistic pleasure of drinking the coffee, or do I want to sleep well that night? So I've tried coffee latte substitutes. And I think that one of the positives of those things, there's lots of them. So the one that I was drinking was that Clever Super Sleep Time Super Latte. I have no financial relationship with Clever. I bought it. My wife technically bought it for me for a gift. But one of the nice things about it, it's a very unusual taste. It's very pleasant. I have a certain way that I make it. I don't sweeten it. And as I sit there and watch TV at night or read or whatever I'm doing, and I'm drinking that latte, sure, maybe the ingredients in the latte are helping me fall asleep faster. Or I drink tart cherry juice. And there's research that shows that tart cherry juice, it was a 2012 study in the Journal of Nutrition that said, you know, individuals who took that slept better. I mean, I think that in an older group, they were sleeping like they had 62 minutes less wakefulness after sleep onset than the control group. There was only 8 subjects, I think, in the study. But, you know, so could there be some positive? Sure. But what I'm really most interested in is that unusual sweet, bitter taste of the tart cherry juice, or the indescribable, warm, comforting, earthy taste of the Clever Time Sleepy Latte. I don't taste those drinks any time in my life outside of generally prior to going to bed. So once again, we've got the auditory Zeitgeber. We've got the olfactory, the smell Zeitgeber of the lavender and the song playing. And we're tasting the super latte or the tart cherry juice, some unusual drink that you don't drink at other times during the day. You're going to consume in that hour before you go to bed. Now, it's not going to be alcohol. It's not going to have caffeine in it. And you'll start to associate that with maybe better sleep. Finally, our last sense is touch. So we could have gone invisible touch, maybe with Genesis or something. There's lots of human touch. Would probably be even a better one by Bruce Springsteen, because the research I found on touch, which was really interesting, was from the Journal of Effective Science 2022. Effective experience and regulation via sleep touch and, quote, sleep touch among couples. So basically 210 married couples were studied, and they were looking at that touch that you experience with your partner when you go to bed. And that's different for different people. For some people, it's the full-on spoon where, you know, one person's in a little C shape, another person's in a slightly bigger C shape right behind that person, and you got your arms around each other and you sleep like that all through the night. And I find that to be insane, but if you do it, I'd love to hear about it. You know, so you've got this almost full body skin to skin contact throughout the entire night. Other people maybe start like that and then they retreat to their separate corners of the bed, or, you know, hold hands. I often like to have just my hands somewhere, like, you know, wedged between the bed and the small part of my wife's back, just a little connection there. I don't think she appreciates it that much, but I just kind of like to have just a little teeny bit of myself touching her. But, you know, a lot of times I feel her kind of move my hand away or something. So everybody has their way of doing it. So this study was looking at, does that sleep touch actually affect sleep? And it was really interesting study to read, and I'll read from it. Sleep touch was linked to both evening positive spousal events and enjoyment ratings. Sleep touch was associated indirectly with fewer negative spousal events, less spousal related stress via angry, irritability, morning mood. They reported happier, calmer attitudes, being less angry and irritable, both at night and in the morning. And my favorite result of the study was wives' sleep touch related to much happier, calmer husband mood and perhaps better sleep. They're a little bit gray on that. However, husband's sleep touch was unrelated to wives' report. I love that, because that's exactly what we're experiencing. Like, I find having a little bit of connection with my wife Ames to be really positive and helps me sleep and feel better and happier. God knows I need that. I don't think the Chris touch is affecting her sleep in any way and maybe having a negative effect. But I really believe that thinking about touch and having some sort of ritual, either with your partner, or if a dog's in bed with you, or just taking the time to appreciate the feel of your bed, or the feel of the sheets or something of that nature, can be a really nice way to end the day and set yourself up for great sleep. So that's it. I really enjoyed talking about the five senses with you. I hope between Gretchen's awesome book and this podcast, there's something related to your senses, the exploration of your senses, the really paying diligent attention to your senses that you can bring with you to your sleep process and help you sleep better tonight. Again, if you have ideas about the five senses and sleep, love to hear them, love to share them on the show. You can DM me at Dr. Chris Winter on Twitter, Dr. Chris Winter Instagram. We have our YouTube channel, the Sleep Unplugged podcast YouTube channel. You can communicate through that as well too. Please like and subscribe to all these social media. Please like, subscribe, and rate the show. We really appreciate it when you do that. And love to read those reviews out. If you have any comments, corrections, criticisms, let us know. Enjoy your five senses. Enjoy the rock opera, Tommy, and show it some respect. And until next time we talk, sleep well.